So it started with literally just a light bulb of an idea, sketching out what it would look like.
For UNHEAD, our main goal in the long term is just to be able to reconnect our diaspora with, these sick historical authors that they used to be such common names in our households. But I think now, as we are moving into like our first and second generations here, I think there's a decline in I would say Punjabi literacy.
I think something that's super key, and I think I really think it's important to emphasize about UNHEAD magazine, is that it's intended for people at all levels of Sikhi.
So there has been a problem with censorship, especially with Sikh literacy in the past, and like our website can be blocked. That would prevent access to everyone. So having a physical copy that can be mailed, just allows it to be in every house.
But in terms of translations, what I think might surprise you is our translations are actually done by hand.
Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. The show is about to begin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another brand new podcast episode. So, as many of you may or may not know, these podcasts and the entire YouTube channel is a complete passion project, something I do completely in my spare time. To give you an example, around 11:30 in the evening on a Monday, after a busy day at my usual 9-to-5 office job, I suddenly remembered that I had been given an exclusive early access preview of the UNHEAD magazine. So, to be frank, the impression of the first two pages was immediate and positive. Overall, the magazine is over 80 pages of perceptive personal views that are complemented by graphics and photography to produce a magazine of the highest caliber. As a consequence, today I'm joined by four of the 26 team members that work on this project, and together we help provide you with the ultimate guide to UNHEAD magazine. If you wanted to order yourself a copy, you can do so via the link in the description. Now, with that out of the way, let's get right into it and let me pass it on to myself from the past. All right, so today I have a very special can't get my words out. I have a very special podcast today. Not only is it because I'm joined by four incredible women, but it's also because of the fact that they are part of a very strong team that has put together what I think is probably one of the best magazines on Sikh history and philosophy that kind of we've had in the diaspora in a very long time. Normally I would introduce everyone, but because there are four people, I am going to let them each introduce themselves.
Thank you so much for having us today, Amar Virji. It's been an absolute honor to be on your podcast. Just to start off, my name is Jasmine Kaur. I'm one of the editors in chief of UNHEAD magazine. I play a role in terms of helping to manage everything, whether it's finances, logistics, outreach, media. I kind of have an overreaching arm in every single pocket. And I'll let my amazing team that holds together UNHEAD introduce themselves.
Thanks, Jasmine. Waheguru ka Khalsa, Waheguru ki Fateh. So my name is Jessica Singh. I am the director of editorial for UNHEAD. Basically what that entails is developing the editorial style and overlooking the Gurbani translations and transliterations that we've managed to develop into this magazine. It's definitely been an interesting process, but we'll touch on that later.
I'm Praveen Kaur. I'm the director of outreach. So my role is to expand UNHEAD's network and get us in touch with people who may be interested in the magazine. I've just been reaching out for the past year.
And I'm Amit Kaur, and I am the director of media. And part of my role is, primarily my role is to work with the UNHEAD Instagram, create ways to support outreach and getting the word out about the magazine, and just promote as much as I can.
Awesome. It sounds like there's a lot that's involved behind the scenes that I don't think people would appreciate or would even know, really. I think the fact that there's so many of you, and this is just a fraction of the team, correct me if I'm wrong. So yeah, I think it's amazing to see such organization within the Sikh community, and especially from like such youngsters. I know I look about 12, but I'm a lot older than I look. So yeah, proverbially, I've already said it, hats off to you guys for this. The first question I want to start with is, what is the UNHEAD magazine? So to just the average listener, someone who perhaps hasn't got a clue, what is UNHEAD magazine?
Definitely. So UNHEAD magazine is a multimedia magazine concept. Our goal is to spread Sikhi as much as we can. We're a student-run Sikh print magazine. We draw on the Singh Sabha movement's essence, and we're hoping to create spiritual and historical pieces that all accumulate to inspire a new wave of Sikh literacy and especially love to connect with our guru.
No, touche. I really like that. I was just making sure no one else was going to answer, but equally I was just listening to and taking that in. You mentioned then obviously about the Singh Sabha movement, and one of the questions that I had picked out was, I think it was on one of the pages near the back, it was a letter from the editors, and it was paying homage to the Singh Sabha. Now, the reason why that piqued my interest is because when I first entered into kind of Sikh history at university, it was very much looking at the impact of colonialism and how the Singh Sabha movement was not part of it necessarily willingly, but there was a connection between the process that was occurring and the movement. And a lot of my early stuff, which now doesn't exist on the internet, probably for good reason, was quite polemic against the Singh Sabha movement. It's taken a while, but I've kind of come to a very happy medium in kind of my perspective of that. And hence one of the questions what is the reasoning behind not just paying homage to them, but almost kind of like invoking their spirit in what you guys are doing today?
Absolutely. And that's a great way to put it, of invoking their spirit. We definitely take a huge amount of inspiration from them, because when the British took over, everyone was scrambling. You know, their method was conquer and divide, and they really went for our gurdwaras and our Sikh spirituality. And it wasn't just an attack of like physicality, but it really was like our internal jolt and like our power. And because of that, we think the Singh Sabha movement played a critical role in that time, you know, however affected by colonialism they were, but to really, you know, by Bhai Kansing Nabha's work, Hum Hindu Ne, or, you know, by Jodh Singh Steeks, like so many other preliminary works that guide who we are today that Sikh scholars constantly reference came out of that time. You know, they were at the top of their game conserving things. And I like to go back to Jeto Gangsar Da Morcha, when, you know, at the B Sahib, the British just like imprisoned Ripu Daman Singh, and then they took out a granthi in the middle of an Akhand Paath. Sikhs started to do Akhand Paath as a form of protest. British didn't like that. They took him out, and Sikhs from Hong Kong, Singapore, Canada, you know, they had a waiting list of who would go to the Morcha and support Sikhs in this small little Gurdwara in Jeto. And that was the power of the Singh Sabha movement. We're hoping to carry that torch forward. I mean, organizations like Khalis Foundation doing Sikhi to the Max, Sundar Gutka apps, you know, they play a pivotal role in making it easier to adapt in the West with people who don't have these resources, whose parents come here and assimilate, and then they don't have time or they don't have those resources because they're starting from scratch. I know a little bit about Sikhi. My parents know a lot more. And if I can contribute one piece into this world, and I think that's how the majority of our team feels, if we can learn just a little bit more, or if we can contribute just a little bit more to this world that is just a playground to help someone else reach God or like feel connected a little bit more, why not do so? And I think that's kind of where we take inspiration from the Singh Sabha movement, is like, they conserved so much. It was the literary Renaissance period for us. And why? And like, they were going through a similar struggle as we are now. Like, no one really pays attention to Sikhi that much anymore, or we have very different conceptions. You know, on Twitter, there was an argument like a couple years ago. It was like, Sikhi means dil saf. That's about it. And that's probably one of the byproducts of being a Sikh and following Sikhi. But it's not what being a Sikh is. And we've kind of really lost sight of what that means. So we're hoping to really go back to the basics and understand our history and contextualize Bani so we can see where Sikhs come from and just help them create authentic relationships with Bani, history, and Sangat.
No, fair. No, that's absolutely fair answer. I just think... I don't want to digress into this, because I think like we could be here all day, and I'm certainly at a point where I'm happy to agree to disagree. But I just think it's interesting in a period. So in the last like say 10, 15 years, we've seen kind of a huge interest within the Sikh community in pre-colonial literature, poetry, you name it, kind of anything that's from a period prior to the British is really kind of taking off lately. So it's interesting from that angle that you guys have decided to go with the Singh Sabha, and like rightly so, they have their place in history, and like they were pivotal in ensuring kind of Sikhi preserved in whatever fashion that it preserved during that period. I also just think it's interesting to hear words like they conserved Sikhi, when I think in, and I know this is a like this is a slight disagreement, but like in my eyes, I think they reformed Sikhi. And I think actually what came out the other end was a lot different to what it started with. That itself is a huge debate and a topic and a podcast in itself. But I'd rather be kind of straight up and honest about that, because I think that's kind of pivotal to it. But you are equally completely correct, like as in what you said about Bhikkhansik Namba, and equally all of the other great kind of literary giants that came from that period. Yeah, we definitely use their work. But yeah, hence the question, and yeah, touche to you on that answer. What's the long-term aim of the magazine then? So you've spoken about how kind of you guys are wanting to connect people with themselves, with Sikh history, with philosophy. Like what's the actual, in like a couple of sentences, if you were to kind of summarize what you're trying to do with this magazine, what is that, or what would you say that is?
Yeah, I think I can speak to that. I would say that for UNHUD, our main goal in the long term is just to be able to reconnect our diaspora with just not only their bonis, but also their history and their, you know, these Sikh historical authors that they used to be such common names in our households. But I think now, as we are moving into like our first and second generations here in America, Canada, in England, I think there's a decline in I would say Punjabi literacy. And I think as a result of that, we've seen just sort of disconnect to our bonis. And so ultimately what we are envisioning for UNHUD is just for it to be sort of a guide for Sikhs to consult and to read and to engage with, just to be able to go out and explore these authors and this history themselves. We are by no means, you know, the only way to do it, but we just hope to be able to sort of create that connection and that link for diasporic Sikhs to be able to do this kind of research and to develop in this way themselves. That's kind of the goal in our magazine, is just one of the biggest emphasis that we had is being able to not just cite Gurmukhi and Gurbani, but also to enable our readers to understand it. And so one of the biggest facets in our magazine is that you don't have to be able to read Punjabi or Gurmukhi to be able to understand anything. But it's a great learning tool to be able to, I guess, get a start for where to begin with that. And so we put an emphasis on not only translating our Gurbani, but transliterating and breaking it down word by word, such that a reader can read it and then understand and begin to recognize these words and these phrases, and then be able to read Bani themselves. And so I think ultimately our goal is just to be a tool, a household tool, to be able to reconnect Sikhs.
No, touche. When you talk about translations and transliterations, like what is involved in that process? Like how do you go about doing that? Or is it kind of just a case of, in some cases, like people would just use like search Gurbani or Sikhi to the max or something? Or is there more of an in-depth process involved in what you guys are putting out in the magazine?
I definitely think, so it's definitely a lot deeper than that. We will, you know, one of the things I love about Sikhi to the Max is it makes searching for Shabads a lot easier, whether you can put in the words and stuff. So definitely searching for things that we need or pulling it up, we've constantly relied on Sikhi to the Max in terms of that. But in terms of translations, what I think might surprise you is our translations are actually done by hand. And what I mean by that is we have a staff member sit down And we have them sit with a bezurg, and they open up by Vishenji Steak. I mean, he only was able to finish up till like Rag Sorat, I believe. So anything after that, we'll use, you know, by Saib Singh or by Harbans Singh or whoever has done the Shabads and stuff past that. We'll refer to those steaks and we'll go word by word. What does this word mean and how we can put it in a sentence? And that's what we come up with. And then once kind of the very basic definition is down, then in the article we expand on the reflection aspect of that, because in steaks you get the word by word, you get the definition, and then you get kind of the reflection by the author who wrote it, which is immensely helpful when we try to include that reflection into our actual article and what they're trying to say and what the meaning of the Shabbat is. So we've definitely relied on resources to search for things. Great, they're amazing search engines, but in terms of the actual translations that are in the magazine, they have all been done by hand, you know, opening up a steak, and they're all cited too. And Jessica can speak more to that, where exactly we got them from, what boti and what pages they're on in that boti.
Yeah, I think including that in our magazine has been really important, just to be able to I guess gain a level of trust with our readers, in that we cite just everything. But with the translations and transliterations, I think it's been really interesting too, that we've just kind of been learning how we want to make this obviously as accessible as possible for English readers, but there are so many like words and just ideas in Gurbani that just don't translate. And so that's also been like a super interesting process, is just understanding the Bani ourselves is like step one. And then step two, being able to translate that further for our readers. It's been something that we've had to work on, but I definitely think that the translations and transliterations that we include, I really hope that they're helpful for readers, and that we're hoping that you can, again, like recognize the words and these phrases that pop up and be able to contextualize them in other Bonis that you read outside of just the ones that we've included in this magazine.
Just to add on to that, I think something that's super key, and I think I really think it's important to emphasize about Anand Magazine, is that it's intended for people at all levels of Sikhi. So what I mean by that is it's really reflected in the team as well. And when we went through all these translations and transliterations, I remember like so many of us, you mentioned a team of 26, at least I want to say like at least 5 to 6 people, Jasmine, correct me if I'm wrong, read through each translation. And I think because we all are in different, like I said, different levels, I think with each person being able to read it at their level, each way that each line of Gurbani is translated is just so clear, I think, for so many people. So I think that it makes it, you learn so much from each line, and it's so accessible for anyone reading it.
No, definitely. One question that I have, and it might sound slightly odd, but in an age where everything is digital, from books to bank statements, like you name it, it's all on your phone or whatever, right? Why have you decided to do a print magazine? I know there is a digital version, like before someone is like, look, Dumbo, like there is a digital version, but what is the thought, like why go for something that's physical and in print?
So there has been a problem with censorship, especially with Sikh literacy in the past. So just because there can be blockers put on the internet, and like our website can be blocked. And so that would prevent digital access, that would prevent access to everyone. So having a physical copy that can be mailed just allows it to be in every house.
There's also a different level of connection when you have something physical versus digital. And I think a lot of our bezurgs, not even bezurgs, just like bajis and ankujis at Gurdwara at 30, 40 years old, 50 years old, you know, like prefer things in print. And like our audience is very open. It is till like, you know, probably like a junior in high school, even sophomore or freshman in high school, to about 50 or 60 years old. So it really can be read by everyone. And to make that a little bit more accessible, especially to the censorship that Praveen's talking about, like, you never know what the Indian government's going to do.
Yeah.
And so that's why it's really important for us to at least maintain something physical. And I mean, we have the digital copy, we have the audio version too for accessibility. So it contributes to definitely all of that. And the other thing that you kind of hit on earlier was the Sikh youth doesn't have anything like this.
No.
I grew up with my dad getting copies from like Bardu Sahib and different magazines. He had like lifetime subscriptions to from India, and they still get mailed to us today. But yeah, like he would read those to me growing up, and I'm like, wow, these are amazing. But I couldn't read them myself. I didn't know how to write Punjabi that way academically. And I just didn't have that skill. And I used to participate in the Hymn Grant speech competition when I was younger. And so he would get stuff from these magazines and help me put it into my speech. And thinking back on my youth like that, how he was able to have that resource and how we don't have anything like that, especially with the growing population of Sikh artists and exploring that and getting out of the whole doctor, lawyer, engineer appeal, it made sense. It was like, this is kind of the time to do it.
Obviously, then with print magazine, there's like more cost involved, etc. And before we started recording, I think Jessica was talking about some of the logistical issues with like putting this together. I think one thing that I've certainly picked up from talking to you guys just in this little period is that like you guys are serious about what you're doing. There's a lot of time and effort into it. There's a huge team, kind of, there's thought put into every single part of what is happening behind the scenes. I have to be honest, I'm slightly blown away because I didn't think there was such a huge operation behind it. And it's amazing to see. But with obviously putting something together that's physical and in print, there's a huge cost issue. So how have you guys gone about kind of securing the funds for it?
So we've mostly been accepting donations through the Swanth Network and Venmo. So last year we partnered with the Swanth Network, and they were matching any donations that were made for a week in November, and that's going to be coming up again soon. And we've also just had any person who's interested just want to donate to our Venmo, which is at Unhub Magazine.
Brilliant. Awesome. I know it's not out yet, and I think you guys were saying it's hopefully going to be out come December, but from those who have seen it and or like those who have had the pleasure to get a copy, that's me included, what has the reaction been like? And you can't paraphrase what I said at the beginning of this conversation.
So because the magazine hasn't really been released and on a public level, a lot of the reactions we've gotten so far have been through social media, and it's been through the sneak peeks that we've released on Instagram Reels and like pictures. And I think especially towards the art, because you know, you can't really read the articles with the sneak peeks that we've given out, but the art has gotten a lot of amazing reactions. We've gotten people all over the globe. I want to say numerous countries that, you know, I didn't even think there's a huge Sikh population in, and they're reaching out, they're liking the posts, they're ordering the magazine. I think we even have a post with all the different countries that we've gotten orders from. And I think especially, like I said, towards the art, there's so many new artists that have reached out to our account wanting to contribute already to the next issue. Same with writers before even reading any articles. So I think that's been really exciting, just to, you know, even when we got that first physical copy and I started receiving all these videos, I know I myself got so excited seeing all that. I'm really excited for people all over the globe to have access to the magazine soon, because I'm sure there'll be a lot more of a reaction, but so far it's been amazing.
Other than that, we have, the only other people who've seen the magazine are people who have edited the magazine, but like taken a peek, people who have taken a peek of the magazine for editorial purposes, or making sure that we have not misquoted anything, or we have not like blatantly put anything in the magazine that is very just not supposed to be in there. So we've definitely gotten very overwhelming feedback from people in India, even here, like people, you know, doing amazing Seva. I don't want to particularly say their names, but they've been really overwhelmed, and they've given us really critical feedback to reflect on, especially how to remove our magazine from a colonial lens. I mean, we are still colonized, we are products of the West, or, you know, a mix in there. So going to a pre-colonial world is going to be very hard for us, but they are able to offer that insight to us and how to do that, right? For example, in Sikhi, it isn't the concept of sin. Like, the concept of sin is not really, it's a very binary concept that exists in very Judeo-Christian kind of thought processes, and it's not really how Sikhi frames doing something bad. And being good or bad is a constant continuum, and that's something our magazine hits on with the Gurmukh and the Manmukh perspective in the first article. But yeah, just to see our Buzurgs who have taught us so much be amazed with the magazine and our product, I think that's one of the biggest blessings that our staff can ask for, because it means that we have actually learned something that we can apply to our lives. So yeah.
Yeah, and not just our elders, but also just the outpouring of support from youth that have just been like us. Like, I think when we say that there hasn't been a resource like this before, I definitely feel it in the amount of support that people have given us. People are so excited about this project, this like venture that we've sort of undertaken. And it's been so humbling and so, I guess, like, you truly understand like what your Sangat is and how far your Sangat can extend when you embark on something like this, and you get just unlimited like love and support from all of these organizations, even just the people in your life. Like, it's very different. And I think, you know, even when we're talking about funding, there have been people that are willing to donate even before they've held or seen our magazine. And I think that just means so much to us, like just the amount of support that we've gotten from everyone. It means the world to us.
I probably should have started with this question, but I think, I just think after getting this far through the conversation, one thing that's come across is like, there is so much energy from you guys in terms of what you're doing, what you want to get done and how you want to do it. How did this team come together? Like, I know there's just four of you here, which in itself is quite a large group, but like, there's 26 of you on page 6 or whatever of the first edition in terms of putting it together, and I'm sure there are loads more people in kind of your support networks helping you here and there that aren't named or whatever for whatever reason. Like, how did this whole thing come together? Like as in, so I didn't actually realize how many people were involved and kind of how big the operation was. And it's utterly impressive. So how, like, where did this start? Who did it start with? How did the team develop? Like, how did you get from kind of like zero to where you guys are today?
So it started with literally just a light bulb of an idea, sketching out what it would look like. I was sitting in a library. I was like, we need to do this. This would be really cool. And I, you know, reached out to my brother, who's really passionate about this. We hadn't really formed a nonprofit yet. We hadn't filed the paperwork yet, but like, we were like, let's do this. And it was COVID. And I was like, what other time am I going to do this? Passion project time starts in COVID. And we just messaged people on like the Sikh Discord, Reddit, like email lists that we had from working in previous organizations. Just anything, any place where we could talk about it, create an Instagram, repost it in our stories. We actually got a lot of people interested right off the bat. And some of those people are no longer with staff or like made it to the final edition because it did take us a while. There were definitely so many hiccups in between. And I think Amik and Jessica, who joined a little bit after, right, like the very initial phases of the magazine, can speak more to that and how they felt joining the team. So it literally was just outreach. And the bigger the team got, the more people shared and people joined. And, you know, we interviewed, we asked what you want to do, and nothing exclusive, but everyone was willing to lend a helping hand.
So in my head, the more people you would include, the more complicated it gets, because there's more disagreements over translations, philosophy, the way the narrative should be told. Even just in our conversation, like I've already kind of put my hat out there in the ring in terms of kind of what my perspective is of the Singh Sabha. How then have you managed to go, like, how have you managed to blend all of that together? And I think it's an amazing feat, and I think everyone that kind of is exposed to your work should take a kind of a huge leaf out of your book, because to do something with so many people on something that can be so sensitive or delicate is a huge accomplishment in itself. But kind of, could you just talk more upon how, like, you've, how have you managed to blend all of those? Because it's obviously everyone's bringing in their own thought process, whatever, whatever that is. Like, how did then that kind of blend, and how did you ensure that it was kind of like a comfy ride? Because sometimes, like, everyone is aware of what Twitter can be like. Like, I think that's a good microcosm of how these conversations can go. So yeah, how did you guys manage all of that?
Definitely. So just to start off, before Jessica or me or Praveen take over, one of the things that we really emphasize in just the environment of UnHud, whether it's on like our staff Discord or in our Zoom calls, is feedback and collaboration. No matter who is on the editing team, like if we are having an editing session, it is not just the editors there. It is everybody is allowed to be present and everybody is encouraged to be present. So no matter what is done, whether it's a layout meeting with Mukul, our fantastic director of layout, everybody is encouraged to be on that call. And we constantly, like every meeting that we have, we are expecting feedback. Like if I don't hear feedback, or if Jessica doesn't hear feedback, Praveen or Amik don't hear feedback in what they're doing, we consider that a problem. Like we're like, something is wrong. Like there has to be a way to improve and do stuff. And because we provide that space, I think it's really lent to, like, I don't think we've ever had a disagreement on staff, like anything major. Like it might be, I think this word might mean this, or maybe this word might mean this. And then at that point, you know, we talk it out. We're like, okay, what is the context and how that works? And we really dive into that instead of, you know, getting at each other's throats. And because we have that atmosphere, it works really well. And we've never had a problem with that, you know?
I think one of the things that makes it such a productive, I guess, collaborative six space is that we've made such an emphasis on just the fact that everybody is learning. There's no right or wrong in learning and just getting to that point together. You know, we are more than open to, you know, having these discussions and like opposing views. But, you know, that being said, there's, I guess, just this sort of humble environment in which, you know, if you don't know something, I will be, you know, glad to lend you a hand and help you out in XYZ sort of thing. But I just think that there's no like hierarchy of like, you know, who knows more or who is more well-versed and anything like that. And I think that that's definitely helped all of us in terms of not just working on this magazine, but just in terms of our own spiritual experiences. I think we've developed as people throughout the last 2 years so much just because of the sangat that we have in this magazine and the environment that we've created to facilitate that.
Just to add on, I joined the team, I think, a little later than most people. I wasn't in the original core team, but I think when I joined in, I never had met anyone in the team in person before. And it was so amazing to see how compassionate everyone was, how supportive everyone was. And like Jessica just said, I think it also reflected in how no one was judgmental at all with anything. And I think that's really rare to see in six spaces, at least from my experience, to not have that judgment. So I honestly think that's a really big deal of its own. And another thing that I really think the UnHud magazine team does really well is there's a huge sense of trust within all of us. And I think, like, for example, as director of media, I feel like I have a lot of liberty in what I think, or if I have a certain vision, I feel like everyone really trusts whatever vision I have. And it's really helped me develop as well as a person. I feel a lot more confident. So I think it really extends past just being part of this magazine team. It's really me a lot of skills as well. So I think it's been a really great experience so far. And I'm really, again, very excited for this magazine to be in everyone's hands soon.
No, that is actually, like, it's amazing to hear how kind of positive it's been for you all. I think, or equally, that brings me on very nicely onto my next question, which is kind of for all of you, like, what have you guys learned along the way? And that could be anything. That could be, like, in terms of your personal development, your spiritual development. I don't know, even just sometimes being able to, like, paraphrase things is a really useful skill that takes absolutely ages. Or I don't know what it is. But, like, it sounds like a really, To be quite honest, I'm kind of jealous because I wish there was something like that around where I lived, because I'd love to be kind of headfirst in something like that. But kind of, yeah, what have you guys kind of learned along the way with doing this project? Because it sounds like there's been so much put into it. It's almost like you guys would be learning things almost like daily, especially if you're like sitting, reading around like translations and transliterations of Gurbani and debating, all right, well, what does this actually mean? Which is a rabbit hole in itself, technically. But yeah, what, like, whoever wishes to take the mic, like, what have you guys learned along the way doing all of this?
So for me personally, I think I've learned a lot. At the time that I joined UNHUD, I wasn't really too knowledgeable about Sikhi. Like, I had only known like the basic Sakhis that I think everyone has heard. And for me, I worked on the article about Amrit Vela. I would have never known that there's like a proper reasoning behind why Sikhs wake up and practice Amrit Vela. Like, that was really eye-opening for me. And yeah, just learning like that there are specific reasons for why we do what we do and why we read the Banis that we read, really helped me understand exactly like what it is that I'm learning.
One thing I've learned is not to be afraid. And I've also learned how to use commas and quotes properly, but that's a side issue we can get into another time. Thanks to Jessica. We've like literally spent hours debating on where commas should go. Never thought I would be using my time like that, but I have, and it was, it feels rewarding now that I know how to use it. But I've learned not to be afraid of going and opening. My parents have a library downstairs of Sikhs, and I'm like, I can't read this. Like, I don't know how to read this stuff. Like, this is way too hard. And I'm not afraid to open up a Sikh and navigate it and be like, Dad, I need you to explain this Shabad to me. And like have that conversation with my parents, like, what does this Shabad mean? Mm. Or like, oh, okay, like, what do I need to read for this and ask for help? And I think that has made things a lot better for me in terms of my own personal journey. I mean, I've definitely learned a lot of the stuff that we put into the article, because like these were just topics I had heard about that like correlated with the theme of time, but it was never something I truly knew. And now I know them. And now I want to know more. And so I'm not afraid to know more now. And I think that's a really big thing that a lot of people start with. Like, I mean, it's always hard to start something, right? And it's like, you feel, I feel like that's another big thing where UNHUD can kind of bridge the gap, is where people feel afraid or they feel like discouraged because they're like, oh, this entire thing is in Punjabi. I can't do this. Or I have to wake up at Amrit Vela every day. Like, I have to do Baat five times. Like, they get discouraged really easily. And I am in this boat too. Like, I'm not speaking, you know, without including myself. So I think that's what UNHUD has taught me, to not be afraid, especially of Bani and your own religion. Like, there's no reason for that ever. And like, my gurus wouldn't want me to ever feel like that either.
I think just, you know, in the essence of just being able to, sort of enable other people to understand their history and their Banis. I think we've done the same for ourselves, because all of us come from different levels of just our own knowledge. None of us claims to know everything, but I definitely think we've grown in this journey. It's been so interesting. I mean, like for myself, I can definitely say that I've learned a lot in my experience with the editorial part of this, and that I didn't understand that even the resources that we do have, some of them in here in the diaspora, how entrenched they are in the Western lens. That's been something that I think all of us have sort of grappled with in creating this magazine, is just, it's hard to separate yourself from that Western lens, because as Jasmine said before, like, we are a product of it, having grown up here, right? And so it's interesting in that, for example, like in our editorial like guide or like development, one thing that we've done is we've strayed away from the idea of God or Waheguru as a male entity. Right. So I think that a lot of our translations or our resources for translations tend to use a they use he, him pronouns and, you know, sort of that like gender binary that I think that when you have that, even in your translations, inadvertently, you think of like your idea of just God and what God can be is warped. And I think that that translates to how you think about the rest of your sort of life as well, is when you have this sort of like limited view of what God is and what God can be, then I think that sort of diminishes your, I guess, your idea of what Sikhi is as well. And so that's been an interesting process to embark on. But yeah, I definitely think that it's been really fun growing spiritually, but then also growing spiritually within the Sangat. I think that's been even better.
Yeah. And for me, I'll keep mine pretty simple because I don't want to give too much away about the magazine, but I think it's one thing to really understand history or baseline surface level, understand like historical facts, the Gurbani translations that you see. But I think it's another thing to actually truly understand how to apply it. And I think something that we've really intentionally done with the magazine is using real life examples, modern examples, and be able to really apply it in my own life. And I think the magazine does a wonderful job of doing that. So that's something I really learned about a lot of different topics. And so that's just a general statement, but I think the magazine's very accessible and relatable, which is kind of rare to find in a lot of texts that are out there.
No, touche. You've just got my mind wondering now, because you were talking about the translations of how kind of the names of the divine are translated within Gurbani. And yes, I completely get where you're coming from. I think it's interesting because there are some, and I know we're going down a rabbit hole now, but like there are some terms that are masculine in Punjabi, and so they're translated. But I think the problem is then when they're feminine, they're not, and that's then obviously the issue. And then obviously, and this is also why I think it's really interesting with this. I don't want to get into the debate, but I just find it interesting that you're coming from a Singh Sabha angle, when actually a lot of the Bani that commemorates the female or like the divine feminine energy is actually shunned by them and disregarded. Not all of them, admittedly. Equally, like Baikanting Nabbas Mahan Kosh does include Sarabdo Granth and all the rest of it. So like some of the stalwarts of the Singh Sabha movement did accept that. But it's just an interesting, it just is making me think. But anyway, just putting that to the side, coming back to the first edition of the magazine, why or kind of what was the thought process about picking the topic for that, which is obviously time? Like, why did you guys think it was, like, what was the thought process behind picking that?
So when we first got started, we had like a list of, I think, like 15 or 20 topics. And everyone was so excited at the time that we just, we felt time was really important, especially because we had the farmers protest going on and there were just other world events that were happening. And it like made us think about the different parallels in history and current times. So we felt like time was good to go with at the time.
I just like the bit at the end where you said it was the right time. I thought that was quite clever. I don't know if you meant it, and if you didn't, even better. Like, it was absolutely bang on. What can we expect after the first edition? So obviously you guys are hoping that kind of the first edition starts to go out around December. What can we expect after that? Like, when, I know you guys are probably fretting just about the first edition at the moment, and I'm now going to ask you about the second edition, but like, when can we expect kind of the next few editions to come out? Are there any kind of hints you can give us to what they will cover, or is it kind of very much a shush shush situation until they're kind of out and ready, or kind of what's happening with all of that?
Definitely not. So you're the first person to hear it from us, and like, we officially haven't done anything on social media or told anyone yet, but to give you the biggest hint that we can, going back from the time edition, we realized that taking on such concepts in Sikhi, even for us, was hard, because we should have started from the basics a little bit more, and so our next issue will be encompassing a lot of the main core crux of Sikhi. And that's where we will be starting. And I think that one, that edition will, in terms of a timeline, if you're wondering, we're honestly not sure. The global supply chain of a paper shortage we didn't know was even a thing has been happening. Our printers are great though, and they've been amazing. So we're hoping to, once we are all also working full time and live in different states and cities, and some of our staff is even abroad. We have a really diverse staff ranging from people who are, you know, 18 to 40 years old or up to 50 in terms of like our artist staff, which is amazing. People with different roles on our staff, you know, some are parents, some are students, some are employed, some are just navigating life and having fun, some are daughters, some are brothers. There's a lot of different roles there that I think contribute to the diversity of the magazine and what makes it kind of delayed in a sense, but not delayed. It takes a lot of work to put it together. Like doing the translations is not easy. It takes a lot of runs to with staff to understand and like finally break down the translations. And they'll never be perfect, but they will be like what we can put out with as much knowledge as we have. Not that that is the end all and the final thing, but it is what we can put out. So based on that, like, ideally our goal is like with winter break coming, you know, hit December, all the copies have already arrived. They're sitting there. That's going to be packing and shipping time. And the last of the orders will start recruitment soon for the next edition. Digital copies should be going out hopefully sooner than the actual print copy. So maybe end of November. And then we'll see how long the next edition takes us and how many people are recruited. I think it really just depends on that. And our team will keep expanding and we'll see, you know, how it goes. And so I want to hand it off to Jessica to talk a little bit more about timing and some of the other stuff involved in that.
I think it's interesting because we are definitely thinking of a second edition, but I think our first edition really made us rethink how we're going to approach our second edition, like sort of back to the basics. So the theme of our first edition, like, you know, as you know, is time. And so it was really interesting to flesh out all the different ideas that we talked about in this first edition and how time is sort of divinely illustrated in our grunt and what our grunt says to us about how we should manage our time here on this earth, or just, you know, so, you know, we touched upon topics like, for example, like Amrit Vela, why is that time so important for us to be able to meditate in the morning? We talk about the human lifetime. What does our Granth say about how we should be using our human lifetimes and how we can most, get the best out of our lives, our human junes here on this earth? We talk about just the creation of the universe and how physics sort of parallels with what we have here in like Sikhi. I think that just talking about time really made us as a board, I think, just sort of rethink our own lives in a way. I think just it put our own lives into perspective, as I think like what I'm trying to say is just like, you know, going through and like putting together these articles and this edition is just like, okay, wait, what am I here doing? Like, what am I doing with my time? Is it productive? Is it like, what am like, you know, is it aligned with what I should be doing as a Sikh? Am I really maximizing my time here to be able to, you know, give back to my Sangat and things like that? And so it really sort of realigned the way that we think about our own lives. And then I think we sort of went from there and we were like, okay, wait, maybe we should backtrack and talk about the basics. Like, I think that definitely would have helped in our putting together of this edition. But yeah, it's definitely been quite a process in the way that we are learning about all of this, just as much as our readers are also learning. We again, like, we don't claim to know anything. We ourselves are learning in this process. I think a lot of people have this like misconception that we know anything about what we're writing about. We really don't. But that's kind of the fun part of it, right? Like, just going through the research and learning together and learning about all these authors that have taught us so many different things and so many new concepts and ideas, and reframing our idea of what Sikhi is and what we ourselves are. So I think that it's just been a really interesting process, and we've grown a lot out of it.
Yeah, I mean, who knows, like, if Anhad wasn't here, I don't know if I would have ever picked up a Sikh out of my, you know, parents' library and really opened it and interacted with it. So I think that's what this goes to, like, doing all of that and really not being afraid to do all of it.
I've asked even all of the questions that I had written down, and a few others, obviously, as we've kind of digressed. Everyone obviously missed the great conversation or debate I had about how Celsius is better than Fahrenheit, but I won't start that when there's four people against one, obviously slightly outnumbered. But I just wanted to double check, is there anything in particular that we've missed out or you wanted to mention, or anything that kind of you feel needed to be included?
Maybe if you aren't following our social medias, you should follow us at Anhad Magazine. Literally every social media has the same handle. And make sure to place an order.
Thank you all. Continue with what you guys are doing. I think it's really, really impressive and pretty insane as well at the same time, because it's, yeah, I don't think it's something that we've ever seen really in the youth. Touche. I will leave you guys to the rest of your day, because it's like middle of the day there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Before we all hop off, and I think that this is something that, like, we as a board are looking for is a lot of feedback from just anybody who reads our magazine, whether that's like the content or just the way that we put it together, doesn't matter. And so call it curiosity kills the cat. But
yeah.
You did mention that you disagreed with something in it. So we would love to know.
Okay, so it's not that I disagree with anything that's in the magazine, right? So I think that, like, I should clarify that. I think if that's kind of what or how it was worded, that wasn't the intention. I think for me it was just interesting to see. So I think it's also the fact that I'm in the UK, and I don't know whether the experience is similar for you guys in America or wherever you guys are, like, I'm assuming you're all in America. But in the UK for probably the last like decade, if not longer, maybe the last like 15-20 years, and there's been this huge kind of move from the youth in particular to look at pre-colonial sources and kind of go in that direction. My personal gripe with the Singh Sabha is that, and it comes from, again, a lot of what I did at university, which was like, my second year project was trying to remember the exact question now, but it was something along the lines of like, how has the Rehth Mirarda changed and modified over time or something? And I think things for me that really blew me out of the water is like, if you read the SGPC Rehth Mirarda, it talks about Jorpe Sahib and it says don't read Jorpe Sahib after Pori 24. And if you go and read Jorpe Sahib after Pori 24, it starts to talk about the divine female. And so there's loads of, like, I know that's a random ass like example, but there's loads of these different things that I can pluck out and be like, well, actually, from my perspective, I feel that Singh Sabha reformed Sikhi, but like you spoke about it being conserved, and I just thought that was really interesting, because from my perspective, I would say they reformed it because they were, if you've not read any of Arvind Mandir's work, you definitely should read some of his work, because I think you guys would absolutely love it. But like, they didn't have the words to be able to enunciate what Sikhi was to the West, and I know they were in a power dynamic that they weren't in, like, they weren't the dominant party. Like, I'm aware of like all of the kind of everything that's working almost against them, but it's almost like, in my perspective, and I know this is going to sound really crude, but if you can't enunciate something properly, don't say anything at all, because I feel, and for argument's sake, Trump's first translation of Guru Granth Sahib Ji into English, and he talks about like one God. where in Ikunkar does it say the word God? Like, what? Like, just, and so for me, I really feel like, and this is something that, like, I'm more than happy to discuss in depth and like kind of debate and go round and round with it. But for me, it's almost like the Singh Sabha conserved Sikhi, but in doing so, it had to reform. Like, as in, there was so much that they were like, this doesn't stack up for whatever reasons. And a lot of it for me is they were just out of their depth. Like, so even today, think about the controversy that surrounds Dasam Granth. It's because a lot of the Sangat, the congregation, whatever the word is you want to use, are out of their depth in terms of how to understand that. And actually, once you start kind of understanding the layers to, all right, actually, well, think about it. If Guru Gobind Singh is your father, wouldn't he want to tell you about all of the intricacies of life and how complicated and get and how attachment can lead to all sorts of crazy ass situations? And then you're like, actually, yeah, that makes fair sense. Rather than actually, oh, it's some pornographic literature that someone's just put together and kind of thrown out there as a grunt, right? So, yes, it's not that I disagree with anything that's in the magazine. I just think for me, from a historical and philosophical perspective, I have disagreements with the movement, with the Singh Sabha movement itself. But that's not to take away anything from them. As in, like, all of them had far more kamai and, like, merit than I will ever have. But, like, for you guys, it is the fire. And then to see how you guys have taken that and transformed that into the magazine, like, the fact that you're reading Steaks, the fact that you guys are actually sitting around wherever and, like, debating, right, what does this punkti actually mean? Hats off. Like, I can't, like, I can't, like, be like, oh, that's a bad thing, right? So yeah, in a nutshell, it's just that from what I've researched, I wouldn't necessarily.
Yeah, I totally get what you're saying. And I think when we want to use, that's why, like, when I made that comment at the end, like, we're not copying them, or like, we're not, because they did use words like Lord and Savior, and they did put it in a very Western lens. And I think that that was their attempt to help understand. And it obviously wasn't, there was no negative intention, but yeah, like you're saying, like, there were things that were not encapsulated perfectly. But yeah, like, that I would agree with what you're saying, that, like, we, I mean, I know that we've, like, explicitly put it out there, but our interpretation of the movement is more about the power,
yeah,
that they had to put pen to paper, and then the power that they had to fight. And that is the I think we should probably clarify that too, is like, That is the power that we're drawing on when we reference the original Singh Sabha movement of the night, when they had the several morchas and they were actively trying to just restore as much as they could. You know, what was the purpose of Hum Hindu Nahi by Bhai Kant Singh Nabare? It was literally to just help Sikhs understand, like, you guys are, like, the British is attacking your guys' is, like, very core faiths, and you guys don't even know how to distinguish yourselves and stuff like that, right? So
no, like, as in, I could, like, so I don't disagree with anything that you guys have said, or like, where you guys are coming from and the inspirations that you guys are taking. I think it's amazing. I just think for me, it's almost a mind psych because of my own personal kind of opinion, yeah, and biases, yeah. Do you get what I mean? And I understand you guys aren't, like, duplicating what they've done. You're just kind of being like, all right, these guys have set a standard, like, if I can try to live up to that, like, why not? And yeah, like, absolutely touché. And it's just that. It's just that I have my own philosophical, historical disagreements with some of the work that they've done. But equally, that's not to take away from the work they did do and the positive kind of action they took. Yeah. And I think one thing also with the Singh Sabha is they took a lot of previous work, just like you guys are doing, and critiqued that or analyzed that. And I guess in a similar way, we're just doing the same thing. I'm just like, well, actually... And I think the other thing is hindsight is a very, very powerful thing. So, like, I'm sat here, like, 100 years later, kind of just critiquing them. Very different to at that point, you've got the British down your throat asking you, all right, define what this says. You don't know English. Like, as in, like, there's so much that goes into it. So, yeah, absolutely fair.
Is there any other content or, like, anything else, like, layout-wise or anything you just were like, this is ugly?
There was one thing that I think really, that I thought about when, at the beginning of the conversation when Jessica asked, and, like, I didn't say it then because I wasn't too sure, but I think there was a lot of white space on some of the pages. And for me, it just stuck out because I was like, All right, fair enough. As in, like, I'm not saying you have to fill all white space, like, as in, like, that can also not work. But on some of the pages towards the end, I was like, this is just a lot of text. And if I didn't, like, so in other words, like, I think the problem is things like Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube Shorts and all this has really made people's attention spans, like, ridiculously small. And I think one thing that I've found, especially with some of the content that I've put out, just as video content or even on Instagram, is people engage with stuff that is, like, super small, like, super succinct. And I know it's a problem in some senses, and in some cases I will refuse to, like, dumb things down because you lose so much in doing so. But it's almost like trying to find a happy medium between, like, something someone's going to look at and go, like, nine out of 10 people are going to look at and go, I don't want to read that, that's too much. And kind of 2 out of 10 being like, I don't want to read that. I obviously wanted to and needed to read it, so I had an incentive to, but it's just like, if you want to maximize readership, I just think that was one thing, because if it was like an average Joe, it's like newspapers. Think about some of the newspapers you pick up. You see some of the pages and you're like, I don't want to read that. That's just too much. Like, there's not enough images. Like, that's what I think anyway.
It's just hard because, like, you're trying to strike a balance with, again, like, all the information that you're researching and you want to tell other people. But then also, like, our layout process was also one that, like, was completely new to us. So it's like we had to sort of find a happy medium. And then also, like, just all the stuff with the printers is, like, all that stuff. But yeah, that's really good feedback, and we'll definitely take that into consideration.
No, not a problem. I think one thing that I can definitely say from doing these podcasts, and it's not the same, but it's obviously there's a creative process, is you guys will, by the time you get to like your fifth or sixth edition, you will have learned so much, and you'll look back at the first one and be like, what were we thinking? So like I do that with some of my podcasts. I look back at the first one and I'm like, this is fucking terrible. Like, who in their right mind thought that this was a good idea, right? Like, as in, if you've ever had the displeasure of listening to the first podcast, like, it just ends. There's no outro. There's no, like, oh, this podcast finished now or whatever. It just, like, it just, we're just mid-talking and it stops, right? So I think that's what, like, I think if I was in your situation, sometimes I feel like you can get disheartened by a lot of criticism. I think what you guys are doing is absolutely amazing. I think you guys will learn a lot in the first few editions, and by the time you get to maybe 4 or 5, you will be absolutely flying. And then, yeah, and then hopefully kind of we'll be doing a podcast on like edition 100 and being like, all right, you've done a century of magazines. Like, what is kind of next for the magazine? So yeah, they were the only things that I could remember from it. Otherwise than that, I thought it was very premium, like, as in it felt like a glossy magazine that you'd find in a, like, in a bookshop or somewhere. Like, it had a, like, it, I know it
wait
was
till
a
you touch
copy.
It.
Yeah, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's gonna have that like glossy feel. Yeah, yeah. Like rubbing my face on it and stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I've even like low-key having paper issues is like the paper. We were really intentional about like the weight of the paper we selected and what kind of paper we selected. And so that's taken a hot minute, but we're like, it's our first edition, so yeah, go big or go home.
Yeah, yeah. It's worth it. It's definitely worth it. It's definitely worth it. No. All right, awesome. If there's nothing else, then I will leave you guys to the rest of your day. It looks incredibly sunny there, and I'm kind of slightly jealous because it was really gray and overcast today. But just continue with everything that you guys are doing. If there's anything that I can help with, obviously just feel free to get in touch. Like, more than happy to do what I can.
Thank you so much for having us, by the way. Like, this is
no problem
for us as well. Like, we've been talking about this like since you first posted us on your story. We're like, oh my god, look. So we've been really looking forward to having this.
Definitely fangirling.
No. I hate, like, I've had a few people say, like, so I've had people who are older than me be like, oh, like, I'm a massive fan of you. And I'm like, how is that possible? Like, and then I always play like the old, well, you're the Sienna. And they're like, oh yeah, I'm the Sienna. This is amazing. So yeah, no, I appreciate that. I just think one thing that similarly to you guys is like, you want to do something, but then equally you start it and you're like, all right, like, now what? How do I make this go bigger? Or how do I kind of push this out to more people? And I think if I can do anything with my platform is to just encourage other people or just put other people out there somehow. So, yeah, whatever it is that I can do, obviously let me know. And yeah, and continue with it. And I hope everything goes according to plan. And I hope we all get our copies kind of as and when, rather than there being more supply chain issues. I'll obviously do more ardas to stop that. But yeah, otherwise than that, I will leave you guys to the rest of your day. Thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you so much, Amir Virji.
No problem. Kasa,
you
reached the conclusion of another podcast episode. I hope you enjoyed it. If you've been watching this on YouTube, don't forget to share your thoughts with me in the comment section below. And don't forget to subscribe and like. If you're listening to this on a podcast platform of your choice, then don't forget to leave a review, as it means a lot more than you can imagine. So first and foremost, I obviously want to quickly apologize to all of you level 2 or higher members, as it says that when you join, you'll get member shout out, something that I haven't been doing. So I apologize for that. However, a quick shout out and heartfelt thanks to our current supporters, N Singh, Gavin Shergill, Gary Parmar, Gurmeet Danjal, and Radhaji Kaur. A special shout out to our longest member, Jazz S, who's been supporting the channel for almost a year now. If you wanted to support the channel and the work I do, consider becoming a member of our Patreon, or subscribing to our YouTube channel, or contributing to our Ko-fi account. All the links are listed in the description below. Other than that, I look forward to seeing you in the next video.